When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Rockies podcast brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Now, new customers, when you sign up using promo code DNVR, you can place a $5 bet on any NBA pregame money line bet, and you win and you get $150 in bonus bets instantly. It's really that simple when you use code DNVR and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. I am your host, Patrick Lyons, and joining me today, a very special guest. Mr. WBC, I think, needs to be your name. You're all about international baseball, crushing it on the WBC Central over there on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. It's Sean Spradling. How's it going, Sean?
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's going well. I've had a couple people say that I should be the WBC guy or Mr. WBC. Haven't come up with an actual name, but as long as people are watching the WBC and following my content, I'm happy with it. So you can call me whatever you want.
Yeah, we'll talk plenty more about the 2023 World Baseball Classic, what's coming up in 2026, international baseball in general. But of course, let's open with some positive news from the Colorado Rockies, the 6-17 Colorado Rockies, who have promoted one of their top outfield prospects today in Brenton Doyle. Gets the call up over 1,000 OPS through 12 games with AAA Albuquerque this year. Five-tool player who has 20-20 capabilities, 20 homers, 20 stolen bases. He's done that the last 2 years in the minors, pretty close to that. Has some strikeout in him, unfortunately, and can go out and get the ball because he is a minor league Gold Glove Award winner. He won that in 2021 in center field, no less. He was a fourth-round pick in 2019 out of Shepherd University in West Virginia, a Division II school, first Division II player selected in that draft. That's always a good story for a guy coming out of Division II, but just in general, for a player to make his major league debut, I think no matter what team you're pulling for or what sport you're following, the first game a guy gets the opportunity to play is always fun and exciting.
Yeah, that's super exciting for him. I mean, it's just like you said, I love this time of the year at the beginning of the season because we do get to see a lot of call-ups, guys that haven't had their chance yet or may have impressed in the first couple of weeks of the minors that got to actually get an opportunity to show out in the bigs is really exciting.
Yeah, the transaction was strange. We had Jonathan Daza get hit in the hand on Sunday's game. Chris Bryant got lifted for an injury related to his lower spine, but we're not going to say that it's a back injury just yet. Yet those two guys stay on the roster. Elhiris Montero, the third baseman, does get demoted, if you will, sent back down to AAA. And That's where the worry comes in for Rockies fans, because we've seen a lot of these young guys come up to the big leagues but not get an opportunity to play. Hopefully that's not the case here for Brenton Doyle. He'll wear number 9, and the number 9 for Rockies, there's been a lot of really solid players. So, like, the number 5 has been Matt Holliday and Carlos Gonzalez. And you go, shoot, you can retire the number 5 twice for those guys, really, if you're a Rockies fan. Number 9, there's one guy who probably should have his number 9 retired, but still – let me know if you've got anything on any of these guys, Sean, because they're all kind of fan favorites and very beloved, and had solid careers with the Rockies. Vinny Castilla the first, and probably the best. Juan Pierre, Ian Stewart, DJ LeMahieu, Daniel Murphy, Connor Joe, and now Brenton Doyle.
I mean, that's an underrated number. Like, number 9 for the Rockies, like, that whole list is pretty solid, I feel like. And it's funny that we talked to that you mentioned Vinny Castilla as well, obviously Rockies legend. He also was on the coaching staff for Mexico in the 2023 WBC. So we can talk about this as well later on if you'd like. But when I was in Miami watching the games and in Phoenix for this WBC, got to just really briefly say hi to him. He had a lot of people surrounding him, but it was really cool to just see him in person after watching him in the baseball world for so long and learning about him with Team Mexico is really cool. So he's a really good guy, it seems like.
And he looks like he can still play, right? Like, he's better built now than back then. Like, it's amazing.
We saw Griffey taking some cuts in the in batting practice before the game for Team USA. I wouldn't have been surprised if Vinny walked up there as well.
Yeah, sometimes he will take batting practice at Coors Field, and he'll put balls out. They had a day last year where some of the middle schools and high schools will come to Coors Field. It's about science, and they do stuff. And so last year it was pretty neat. They were like, hey, let's calculate launch angle and see how far the ball, you know, gets hit. And so Vinny was just out there just hitting balls real easy. Didn't hurt himself, which is great when you're about 50 years old, but just putting balls out into the left field stand. So Vinny is great. Yeah, the number 9 has a lot of history to it for the Rockies. Next 3 days coming up, we've got Rockies playing against the Cleveland Guardians. Actually, the Rockies' first time in Cleveland since August of 2017. They're 4-10 in 14 games in Cleveland, so they haven't had the best of luck. Cleveland, you know, pretty good baseball team since 93, since the Rockies have come about. Monday's game, 4:10, Austin Gomber versus Cal Quantrill. On Tuesday, also 4:10 p.m. start, Ryan Feltner versus Peyton Battenfield. Not a name I'm that familiar with, but he's got 2 starts in the bigs. He's interesting. Don't know who Cleveland's going to have as their starter on Wednesday. Could be Zach Plesac, could be Connor Pilkington against Noah Davis at 11:10 a.m. You are kind of West Coast or Mountain Standard Time adjacent, Sean. How nice is it to be able to just, like, wake up and there's, like, baseball right away? Because I'm originally from the East Coast, and, you know, you got to wait until 1 o'clock. That's it. And then, you know, you're watching baseball until midnight, but it's nice to, like, kind of roll out of bed and you've got baseball and brunch, and it's fantastic.
Oh, it's beautiful. Like, I love having baseball throughout the day. My day job, I just kind of sit at a computer all day so I can kind of check up on scores and stuff, watch some games on the side. So getting to work in the morning and having baseball is fantastic. I'm from Texas, so it's only a 1 hour difference, but still that 1 hour makes a pretty big difference. And at the end of the night, when it ends earlier and you got some time to actually decompress at the end of the night.
Maybe a couple hours now with how quick these games have been going, which has been really nice. And then, yeah, I guess the one benefit, or maybe that's a detractor, when some of these World Baseball Classic or international games are going on, now they're in the middle of the night, as opposed to, you know, maybe if you're on the East Coast and something starts at 4 a.m., you're like, I can make this work. I'd rather not. But if we're talking 2 a.m., 3 a.m., no one's getting up to start their day that way.
I will say Mountain Time was probably the worst time zone for the East Asian pools for the WBC. It was, the games would start at 3 a.m. So I had to choose whether I wanted to stay up until that time and then watch a 3 to 4 hour game into the morning when the sun comes up, or go to bed at as early as I could, which didn't rarely ever happen. And then wake up at 3 o'clock to watch those games. So it was just in the middle to where it was difficult on each side, but I did my best to try to watch as many of those as I could.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, we'll have to, next World Baseball Classic, I'm sure all of us at the DNVR bar on the corner of Colfax and York in Denver will have to have some watch parties. I mean, we hosted the World Cup party for the Colorado Rapids. We'll see about 2026. Maybe we'll lay some groundwork today for that event. And sure 3 years from now, if we don't have even better offers for all of our diehards, currently you get 15% off all your food and drink at the DNVR bar, 20% off all the gear at dnvrlocker.com, 20% off tailgates and takeovers. We've got one coming up on Saturday against the Diamondbacks, so that should be another fun one, a $15 food voucher. You're going to get a free shirt from us at the DNVR Locker. Bus going over to the stadium with all the Breck Brew you can drink on the bus over there. So that's going to be a lot of fun on Saturday. Again, diehards, you're getting 20% off on that. It's also NBA playoff time, so the bar is jumping with both Avs and, of course, the Nuggets, who unfortunately couldn't finish off the sweep. That being said, it's time for the big hoops action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. The excitement is every single game, and it's yours with the touch of a button. New customers, you can place a $5 pregame moneyline bet, and when you win, you get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You don't have to wait 1 second. It is instant. You can also score with the no-sweat same-game parlays every day during the NBA playoffs. Just open up the app, opt in, and place the same-game parlay on any NBA game. And guess what? If it doesn't hit, doesn't win for you, don't worry. You'll still get a bonus bet back up to $10. So download the app now and sign up with code DNVR. New customers can place that $5 pregame moneyline bet and score $150 in bonus bets if your team wins. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook and only with code DNVR. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Massachusetts, call 800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Kansas, call 1-800-522-4700 on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 or older in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restriction apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details and state-specific responsible gambling resources. My DraftKings Sportsbook pick of the week is going to be on tonight's Guardians-Rockies game. First run, we're not going to have a nerfy. Now we're going to be having multiple runs scored in the first inning with these two guys on the hill, probably more so for the Guardians scoring against Austin Gomber. But it is now a second series for the Rockies after being at home. So I think they're going to settle into a slightly better groove, start hitting on the road just a little bit there, and we could see some first inning runs and the Rockies jumping on Cal Quantrill. So take the over on 1.5. So not just one run. I think there's going to be two or more runs. That's going to be plus 230. It's my DraftKings Sportsbook pick of the week. All right, Sean, got to know, where did the impetus, where was the genesis of kind of diving into the World Baseball Classic and saying, you know what, this is kind of underrepresented? Because for as much as it seemed like World Baseball Classic was everywhere, I still felt like there was much more of an opportunity for MLB to jump on things. I think if you even went to MLB.com, there wasn't like a quick tab to even click over and see some of that. But you jumped on it immediately and said, as much coverage as WBC is getting, there's room for even more. And you found that, and you found an audience and then some. What was that genesis for this undertaking?
Yeah, and the funny thing about that is I think that compared to previous WBCs, there was a lot more coverage from MLB, from a lot of the big media companies, and even teams posting on their own socials. I will say, though, with the caveat of that didn't really start until maybe a month before the WBC started, which, for better or worse, obviously, like the priority for a lot of these companies is MLB, Major League Baseball. Like, that's what we cover. That's what we love. That's what we've known for 100 years. However, I, last summer, when MLB officially announced, okay, no more delays, we're having the WBC in 2023. It's time to pick it back up again because it was delayed a couple years after 2020. I was like, all right, sweet. This is great. I loved it in 2017. It was a blast to watch. Let's see what the teams look like. Let's see what like the rosters are going to shape up to be. And back in June 2022, there was absolutely nothing anywhere. There was like a little bit of hype for maybe 2 to 3 days. And then after, once they announced it, after that, there was nothing. So I kind of took it upon myself just to do some independent research, look at who was eligible for what countries, who could be playing, who's maybe hinted at, what players and coaches have hinted at. the fact that they want to participate. And I started making some graphics, like graphic design, dream team graphics of what if everybody from all the countries had decided to participate, what those teams could look like, just so that we could get kind of a visual of what we're expecting in 2023. So didn't really expect anything to come of that. It was more of just like a self project. I mean, I went to school for like sports management and business. So I knew I wanted to do something in the sports world, but this is more like a side hobby. But there was a big interest in those because no one was covering the WBC, especially other countries, like teams, because like maybe MLB had posted a couple things about, oh, this guy committed to Team USA, or this guy might be playing for the USA, but they didn't really post anything else for the other 19 countries. So I wanted to have sort of like a place that we could see the updates and the teams and the news for all 20 countries, because I noticed there was a need for that. So yeah, from there, I just started posting daily updates, daily news, daily content to the point to where like I would have coaches and players and like personnel on the federations of these different countries reach out to me and start giving me these updates because no one else was posting them. So it was, it's been a wild ride the last couple months, but it's been a blast. And I think it just goes to show how much people love this tournament around the world and the potential of it in the future.
Yeah, you have to think that the buy-in from Mike Trout right from the get-go, at least again from the U.S. standpoint, because again, MLB is where all the best players are playing, and yeah, there are exceptions from other different countries, and some of the guys from Japan obviously might be too young, and so they're not eligible to come over to MLB just yet. But if the best player in your sport is going to play, and then Shohei Ohtani says he's going to play, and you say, well, all right, he's 1A, 1B, you know, whatever order you want to put them in. Okay, now we all have to send our best guys. And I think that momentum, really built for this year. And I'm sure you saw that too with the engagement where you're slowly putting stuff out and then more and more responses you come. I'm curious where you're talking about figuring out eligibility for players. So recently I saw a post like, oh, Anthony Volpe. Okay, he's was born in America. He's got Italian, bloodlines. You go, all right, he's an Italian guy, so okay, he can play Italy. And then you found out some information that like, oh, he actually would be eligible to play for Philippines. Where are you getting this information from? Are you literally going player by player and trying to read like every story about someone like going back to high school to look for like these notes and find out like, oh, Lars Nootbaar's mom is Japanese? All right, well, he's eligible to play there too. Where are you really having to dig that deep for each and every player?
I'd be lying if I said it pretty much, if it wasn't pretty much that. All last year, I was going roster by roster and like, oh, this guy, he's talked about his family maybe coming from a different country, or you just look at their name and you see Grayson Rodriguez. Oh, I wonder where his family eventually came from. I'm still working on that one. I'm not sure yet. But there's just a lot of players that I was like, all right, well, they haven't talked about playing in the WBC, but it's possible that they might have dual or even triple eligibility. Like you said, with Volpe, Volpe's mom is from the Philippines, but his dad is from Italian descent. And it all comes down to the eligibility rules for the WBC, which was, I think, probably one of the primary If you looked at any of my Twitter interactions last year and coming into this year, everybody was confused about the WBC rules and eligibility requirements because it is pretty confusing. I was even confused. So I really had to study up on them. Essentially, it boils down to the citizenship laws of that country. So if you are eligible for citizenship of that country, then you can play for the national team in the WBC. The part that gets tricky is that every country has completely different citizenship laws and like different laws and requirements to get a passport. So whereas in Italy, if you can trace it back to a man in your family that was Italian, you can play for the country. Whereas like Japan, your parents have to be from Japan and you have to have a passport. Like their parents have to have a passport. So that's why Lars Nootbaar, whose mom is from Japan and has a Japanese passport, is eligible. But like Vinny Pasquantino, which is like the most Italian name, he had never even been to Italy until earlier this year, but he was like, I'm playing. This is awesome.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, yeah, I mean, I imagine you're probably contacting various countries' consulate. And I mean, technically, you could be an ambassador for the United States. Like that was going to be one of my questions is, have you also now, because all right, the WBC stuff has kind of dried up. And so you know, the GM of Venezuela might not be reaching out to you because, you know, that business is done. That being said, you're still covering a lot of baseball over in Japan and Korea, Mexico. Are you having to learn other languages to kind of break things down, or are you just using the proper tools still to, like, you know, to break news and to get information on these guys who, you know, aren't typically covered by English media?
Yeah, it's a couple things. I think one, a big help is the fact that Twitter has the Google Translate right in the tweet. So you can just click to translate it. You don't even have to take it to the browser and, like, actually search what that means. So a lot of the time you can get the gist of what a tweet means. And I've just over the last couple months figured out the accounts to follow for breaking news in different countries. And I mean, it pretty much boils down to Spanish and Japanese and Korean for the most part. And then there's CPBL, the Taiwanese league, and like Brazil has a decent following that's Portuguese. So I, for the most part, it's Japanese, Korean, and Spanish. I'd love to learn the languages. It's pretty hard. I've been trying, but for now I've been relying on a lot of, and this is probably the coolest part for me of all of this coverage that I've done. I've had people reach out to me and offer just, hey, if you ever need any help translating or interpreting or putting captions on your videos in different languages, or just like finding articles, please let me know, because I'm always happy to help. And it's just created this, like, the WBC's created this community that I don't think the baseball world has ever seen, to where Japanese fans are often talking with like Cuban fans, and like Canadian fans are like interacting on Twitter with like Taiwanese fans. It's a really cool place that I don't think baseball has really ever been able to fully tap into that the WBC offers.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. And obviously, we think of baseball in the American perspective, and I think that's why one reason in the U.S., there are some people have those takes of like, ah, these games are meaningless. And it's like, okay, I get why you would say that, but you're completely missing it out. But to link someone from Canada and Cuba and say, okay, well, baseball is, you know, might be very popular in our country, but we don't have the same resources. What are you guys doing to kind of get by, or what does the local scene look like on that? That's like fascinating to think about, you know, where that could go. Going back to the, you know, mothers, grandfathers, grandmothers, all that stuff. I don't know if you have a Patreon or anything, but I imagine at some point somebody needs to hook you up with an Ancestry.com subscription, and you can really go ahead and dig in there in a major way. That being said, you've got that avenue, and you got to learn how to speak Japanese. You got to know the kanji. You got to know all that stuff so you can make the big 2026 WBC Team Japan Samurai Japan documentary, Sean. Come on.
I have to find a way to make it to Tokyo in 2026 too. It would just be the icing on the cake. Just, I don't know if you got to watch any of those games, but man, Japanese baseball is wild. So I would love to learn some Japanese. I will say, for my specific situation, my wife and all of her family are Brazilian. So priority one is Portuguese right now. But after that, it's pretty similar to Spanish. I need to learn Spanish. I mean, we have all the Latin American countries that speak Spanish, but Japanese is definitely up there as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think there might be some Brazilian-born players on the American Raptors rugby team. They're a local rugby team that we got right here in Denver. They play at Infinity Park. It's amazing. It's Rugby Town USA's newest rugby team. It's players who've been athletes and top athletes at all kinds of sports that you've watched and loved: baseball, basketball, football, Greco-Roman wrestling, you name it. But now they're learning how to play rugby, and you can actually learn along with them with the DNVR Rugby podcast hosted by Colton Strickler. That's every week. He's got rugby 101s that you can check out. He's talking with coaches and stuff. You can actually go over to AmericanRaptors.com to get tickets or stream some of their games. It's really fantastic. It's AmericanRaptors.com. Check out their upcoming season. And Infinity Park, again, another great spot. If you're not a fan of going and supporting the Colorado Rockies baseball team, go down to Infinity Park. That is a rugby cathedral. I'll kind of put it at that. Crack open a can or a bottle of Avalanche Ale, Breck Brew, of course. If you're not sure where to get it, if it's not at your local King Supers, which it probably is, but if just in case it's not, go to breckbrew.com. Check out their Breck Beer Locator. It's amazing. It's a Colorado company that we love partnering with. It's made with 100% renewable energy. And the Avalanche Ale, I mean, it's that time. It's the Avs. They're doing it. They're going to take down the Kraken, celebrate with an Avalanche Ale. It's totally fitting. And if you need some food to go along with that, well, of course, Illegal Pete's is the spot for you. It's burritos, beer, buddies. But you know what? It's also graduation season, or, you know, it might just be going outside and entertaining for some neighbors. And if you don't have a grill or you don't want to do all that work, Little Eagle Pete's do all that work for you. They'll go ahead and cater your party or your family event, whatever it may be. They got great ingredients, customizable options. It's a perfect way to treat a graduate or the loved ones that are around you, no matter what it is. So don't worry about pulling an all-nighter making food, because Illegal Pete's can do it for you. Illegal Pete's, again, your go-to spot for burritos, beer, and buddies. Sean, you did get a chance to cover the WBC Live. Were you in Phoenix and Miami or just Miami?
Yeah, so for the pool stage, I had a chance to go to Phoenix for a couple games. As I mentioned previously, I do have a day job, so unfortunately I wasn't able to go for all the games, but I made, like, I needed to go to the US-Mexico game. Like, that was my one requirement for Pool C in Phoenix. Got to go to that one, and then for the semifinals and the final, that's when, and that picture up there, that's what you see those, that's in Miami for the I believe it was USA-Cuba and Mexico-Japan, and then obviously USA-Japan.
Yeah, that's awesome. We were trying on getting you on during that time, but again, you were busy. You had that stuff going on, which was fantastic. Yeah, I love the photograph, and there's also video too for anyone that isn't already following you at Sean_Spradling on Twitter. But that video of, you know, the World Baseball Classic ending, and you sitting on the WBC logo, just like, you're not gonna make me go home, are you? Like, you didn't have that look on your face either. It was also just like, this is amazing. I'm not going home, by the way. But also on top of that, I'm still just feeling amazing. Like, it hadn't hit you yet that it was over, because there was just so much. Like, again, it can't be said enough that the matchup everyone wanted to see was Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. And the fact that we not only got that in the finals, but we got that to end it all was just like, you wouldn't believe it if you read it in a story. You'd go, cool, you're a great writer and all, but it's just not realistic. And we got that. That was the reality of it all. It was amazing.
It was, I mean, I feel like we've talked about this over and over, but we can't talk about it enough. Like, that last at-bat has been we've wanted to script that at-bat since last summer when they said they were going to have the WBC. Like, people have literally been talking about it since then, ever since Ohtani and Trout both said they were going to play. I was in the press conference after the US and Japan game. And one of the players for Japan was, he was talking about how it was it seemed so fake and surreal that he thought it was manga. So, like, comic books in Japan, it was so funny because they had to, like, translate it to English, and everybody laughed once they translated it. It was just like, even the players were watching, sitting there in the dugouts, like, this isn't happening. Like, the best player in baseball in the world against the other best player in baseball, going up against each other, teammates. And I truly think that we can talk about this as well. I think the future of baseball is international, and the center of that is the WBC. And so years and years down the road, I think that the WBC is going to be significantly larger than it is now. And we're going to look back and realize, oh, this was one of the very first tournaments that we had. And that is one of the biggest at-bats ever in WBC history. And the fact that we got to watch that, it went to two strikes, two outs in the bottom of the ninth on the biggest stage was beautiful.
I think that that's a great point too, because, you know, what are the big WBC moments, at least for Team USA? Because, again, look, that's just kind of how we think a little bit, or at least how I think. Adam Jones, hey, great catch. But that's just a moment. That's whatever. But to your point, around the world, that Ohtani, Trout, you know, just it makes things just go to another level. And even on top of that, with him going out and running out to the bullpen. So you're like, you're building this anticipation in a unique way, unlike anything else. It's amazing. What changes do you think might be coming in 2026, or what are some better ways to have the continue the momentum? Like, again, it's going to have, especially only being 3 years away, it's still a very long time. Don't get me wrong, it's still a very long time. But you know, you got to reset things a little bit. So is there anything that, you know, you think MLB and the WBC has learned to try to improve upon and continue this momentum?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that are pretty clear that MLB did really well, and then maybe some things that they can work on moving forward in the WBC. This is only the fifth edition of the WBC ever. I mean, it started in 2006, 09, 13, and 17. So it's still a very, very young tournament for a World Cup size tournament. And so I think there's a lot of adjustments that can be made. That being said, I think it was very successful. It was everything that we wanted it to be. I think the big thing is just starting the hype and the publicity earlier. Like, I was following it last summer when they officially announced that they were having the WBC in 2023. And I had a pretty large following of people that wanted to learn about the players and the teams and the history of the teams in the WBC, even last September and October. And so I think that that's very easy to capitalize on, and that will only grow the hype even more. So hopefully that happens next time around. Maybe they'll actually hire me or pay me something to do that for them. I would love to. But other than that, I think the big thing would be figuring out the pools and the host cities. I think there's a, right now, there's a decision that needs to be made moving forward, and they should, I would love for them, MLB and WBC, to be more public and publicize it, because half of the fans want the pools and the hosts to be around the world, and the other half of the fans want them all to be in the same city. And I think there's pros and cons for each of them. If you look at the World Cup, it's all in one city, or at least all in one country, so that you can truly randomize all of the pools, and you don't have Dominican Republic and Venezuela and Puerto Rico all in the same pool together. You can actually have Japan play against those teams in the pool stage. The other side, the other camp is, well, we want to like show off the baseball cultures and environments in these different countries. Like, a lot of American fans learned about Taiwanese baseball for the first time because of this WBC. So I think there's pros and cons to each. I think that there just needs to be a decision that is made, because they've talked about both of those. It seems like Rob Manfred wants to move towards still having it in the different countries, and maybe even expanding to other countries. But I think that clarifying that and figuring out which direction they want to go will be big.
Yeah, the logistics of maybe having it in one place, or even removing the same host countries, right? Like, you get it, you know, in the Far East with Japan and, you know, Taiwan hosting and whatnot, or South Korea. So like, you get that in America. Yeah, it would be interesting for them to get to a spot where it is more like a World Cup in that way, where everyone goes to one location, or maybe, again, you kind of have those early pool play in different locations. I think you'd almost, it seems outside the box to say, well, U.S. wouldn't host with all the stadiums and the spring training facilities and most of the players already being there. But if you opened it up and said, well, we might be able to make this work in Monterey or Mexico City, you know, it's not too bad of a travel to have something like that. I really like, and again, this might not be great for every single World Baseball Classic, but I like that now, with there being 20 teams, the team that is in fifth place now has to qualify. So now, yes, you look at someone like Colombia. I think Colombia was probably one of the best teams that didn't qualify. And you say, oh, now those qualifiers, now people might be paying attention to that maybe a little bit more. So now the qualifiers, instead of being, you know, countries that you don't maybe associate with baseball, like Pakistan or France, you know, whatever, now there's more focus on that. And I think that could be a way to continue to have it grow, or just have players even commit a little bit earlier than just a year out. I mean, again, we saw how the rosters ended up getting shuffled anyway. So, you know, it's not the end of the world if maybe half the guys who commit 2 years early end up pulling out. But at least, again, it builds some of that momentum and reminding, like, wow, yeah, Team USA could be really good with all of these guys. And even if they have to swap a couple of them out, that's fine as well.
Yeah, Patrick, I completely agree with all of that. Like, especially, I mean, I think that having, I guess, like, covering and making, like, publicizing the qualifiers more would be huge, because those were some of my favorite games that I watched last year. Watching the Czech Republic qualify for the WBC for the first time ever against Spain, who was like the huge favorites in those qualifiers to make it to the WBC, was so much fun. Same with like Nicaragua and Great Britain. They qualified for the first time. There were just some really big like baseball stories and history that we got to see last September that not really many people knew about because just there wasn't much talk about it or buzz. Of course, it's September, so it's like nearing the end of the MLB season. But there are still such fun games to watch. So if we can actually make those, I guess, more public and more accessible the next go around, which is only, I mean, it's 2024, no, 2025. So, I mean, it's not too far away. It's only 2 years away. And then the second part, what was the second point that you made about after that?
You have qualifiers and having pitchers, you know, committing early.
Oh, committing early. Yes. Because thank you. Forgot that one. Yeah. So for the commitments, it's really interesting because each country does their commitments differently. US is very specific. We have Major League Baseball, which is where all of our best players are. So we have to get those commitments because not everybody wants to play first of all. Most players do, especially on the offensive side. Pitchers are a little bit, it's just a much trickier situation. But in Japan, there aren't even any commitments. It's just everybody plays. Everybody wants to play. It's the manager that's like, these are the best players. I choose them. And these players are left off the roster. So it's literally like a World Cup roster to where the entire country just wants to play. Same with Korea. I mean, even Dominican Republic and Venezuela, like you have all of those countries that like all of those players are signing up. It's just who is the best players to actually get on the team. USA is the only one right now who were with our pitchers. We're still, I guess, lagging behind or just getting more used to international play. So I think as we have more WBCs moving forward, we'll just get more comfortable with that and be fine with, I don't know, if everybody gets on board to play. I think that commitments earlier are going to help a lot with just like hyping up the tournament even earlier.
Yeah, with each passing World Baseball Classic, it will become, like in Japan, the default. Yeah, I mean, I'm playing for Team USA. Why wouldn't I? And you're going to get all those best players. Have you thought about, you know, how the WBC could get, you know, more pitchers on board in spring training or a different scenario, a different timeline, different things have been pitched? Like perhaps you take a 2 week break where the All-Star game would be and that's when you hold that tournament. Maybe you have an All-Star game full of everyone that doesn't represent their country, but have it then or something maybe towards, you know, the end of the season, maybe before the playoffs start or even, you know, after the World Series, something like that. Is there a better solution or are we just maybe not ready for that better solution just right yet in 2023?
Yeah, that has been the biggest question about figuring out how to get the US pitchers to participate and just when we need to have this tournament. And I think, honestly, the best answer to that right now is probably still spring training. The three options that have been thrown around, and I see pros for all of these, honestly. It's just, I don't know if owners and teams or MLB clubs are going to be on board. The three options are what it is right now, right before the regular season, where arms are fresh. But then the hard part about that is that the pitchers have to ramp up a little bit earlier. I think that we've gotten to a point to where a lot of the pitchers are just ready for that and that they know how to prepare. Like the Padres were like, Yu Darvish is a veteran. He knows what he needs to do to get ready just a week or two early. He's going to be fine. And he's pitched well this season so far. They trusted him and he did well. And of course we can't fully gauge what the injuries are going to look like until the end of the season when we look back on the season. But that's spring training. The other two options are, like you said, which I think would be really fun, an extended All-Star week where you have maybe like a 2 or 2.5 week All-Star week where you do have the WBC during the summer. I think that'd be a ton of fun because then you could have everybody's already taking a break. So you have that time to do the tournament. And then maybe you could even do like a World versus USA All-Star game like you do in a couple other sports, or like a home run derby with all of these world stars. I don't know. There's a lot of options there. That'd be fun, right? Yeah. The hard part with that is that I don't know if owners would want to give up their top players in July when they're really starting to, like, that's when the trade deadline is, and that's when they're really starting to push for the playoffs. And then it'd be the same reason for, like, after the season. A lot of players play in winter ball. A ton of players are used to that, but it's mostly hitters. Pitchers normally take a break during that time. So, I mean, I just think about all the pitchers from the Astros that played in the WBC that went all the way into November. If they had to, like, pitch even longer than that into later November or December, I don't know if their front office would be too happy with that. So I see pros to all of those. I think the consensus right now is still spring training is the best time. But, I mean, I like the extended All-Star break idea.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, I guess if you were in the postseason or going, you're in the World Series, you're kind of exempt or you're excluded from, like, participating from that, like you mentioned. It does make me think, too, with – and again, maybe this is a coincidence. Maybe this is entirely unto Clayton Kershaw, who, you know, was originally selected for Team USA. And for anyone that doesn't know, and you know the details probably way better than I do, but – all these players who participate, there has to be insurance for them so that if a player gets injured, like Edwin Diaz, and he's done for the year, well, the Mets get, you know, recoup those expenses. They lost a player, which is way worse than just, you know, finances. They probably would rather pay a tax, especially the Mets. They would love to pay an extra $7 million to have that closer back. but you need to be insured. And so Clayton Kershaw didn't get insured. And so I'm wondering if that could be an indicator that, again, maybe it's just him and his injury history, which I'm sure is part of it, but also that pitchers could be harder to insure. And so at spring training, or maybe even at any time, it could be harder to get the top pitchers on board because of, again, just the nature of throwing a ball overhand and how unnatural that is and how likely you are to get injured. And so, you know, that could be something that prevents us from really ever, you know, getting the best pitchers to buy in for the WBC.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer to that is yet, because it's just, I mean, it's so messy. Insurance in general is messy, but, like, when it comes to hundreds of millions of dollars at stake for these MLB clubs, you heard Clayton Kershaw talking about it after when he had to, I guess, quote unquote, decommit. He was like, I couldn't get coverage. MLB wouldn't cover it. I even tried to figure out if I could just get in insurance myself, like cover myself, and he just couldn't get it for himself. So there's, I don't know, there's just a lot that's messy with that. That I can't imagine that. I don't know. We saw, for example, Sandy Alcantara, Cy Young winner. He pitched in the WBC. You got Christian Javier, who threw pretty much a no hitter in the World Series last year. He threw in the WBC. So you got Shohei Ohtani, best player in the world, also pitched all the way to the end. You got these top pitchers that are able to get insurance. They get the okays from their team. So I don't think it's going to be a long-term issue. I just don't know what that issue, that I guess the solution is now for guys like Kershaw who do have an injury history. Maybe it's just they're out of luck and sorry, too bad. Like, you're just too much of a liability. But for a lot of the top pitchers, like the Alcantaras and Javiers and Otanis, I think they should be fine moving forward to play in the WBC. And we've seen that they actually want to. So as long as their teams give them the okay, they just need to get that insurance.
Before we kind of briefly touch on the international baseball that's still going on outside of our borders here in the U.S. internationally, let's talk about what's on deck next for MLB. We've got the London Series is back again this year, Cubs, Cardinals. And, you know, in the last CBA, there was something written in there about the potential for some games in Europe, and it seems like Paris is that spot. Have we gained any ground with having a game in Paris, or is there another kind of dark horse city in Europe that we could see, not an exhibition game, but an actual regular season game?
Yeah, I haven't heard much since they announced Paris, so my guess is that they're still planning on it being in Paris, which is the coolest thing ever. I mean, to be able to get to watch games in, like, these countries that we're not used to watching baseball, it's going to be a blast. I haven't heard anything since then. I could see maybe in the future there being games in the Netherlands because they really like baseball. Italy, maybe even. They have a good baseball league there as well. I just don't know what their baseball stadiums look like. It would probably have to be like they do in London where they convert a soccer stadium. But yeah, my guess is Paris. Other than that, it's the London series and Mexico series, which is, like, I think in a week or so. It's coming up soon, this weekend, I think.
Yeah, I would hope that MLB is really using the success of this last WBC to really try to grow the game and be maybe more aggressive than they've been in the past, not just with these series, but also just creating better avenues. Like you said, Italy, does it have the stadiums? Well, you know, it continues to qualify and does well. I think it's pretty much gotten out of pool play just about every WBC. Like, that's really impressive. And so what is MLB doing to, you know, kind of help fund that league or to get more money that way? I know talking with someone who's close to the tournament, you know, with Great Britain, like, their success in qualifying for the next tournament, while I don't know that it necessarily the WBC or MLB, that if any money is changing hands to support them, kind of similar to how soccer is over in Europe, where, all right, if you get promoted, mm-hmm. but then you go back down to a lower league, you still get some balloon payments, and so you still benefit. But the benefits in Great Britain is the fact that now that they have qualified for this next tournament, the government itself can say, hey, this is kind of a little bit more legitimate, so now we can ourselves as a country, you know, fund it and support it within the country. What do you think some of the next steps that MLB has to do to kind of, you know, continue with the success internationally, or just moving the game? Do you think there's a chance for, you know, Mexico City or Monterey to have an expansion team? Probably not 32, but 34. Like what are some of the next steps or some of the things maybe you're bringing to the table that if Rob Manfred is giving Sean Spradling a call, what would you tell him, right?
I would love to see an expansion team in Mexico. We have a team in Canada. I mean, it's possible to do it in another country, and they're just south of the border, especially like Monterey, which is not too far from Texas. Like, it's not that far of a plane ride. Mexico City would be really interesting because it's a little bit farther, but also it's the elevation's higher than Coors. Like, the balls would fly there. So that'd be a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, I think I'm not going to pretend to know the ins and outs of the funding for the federations and how MLB supports the federations. What I do know is that each team that qualifies for the WBC is given a certain amount of money. Once you make it on in the next round, you're given even more. I think if you qualify for the WBC, it's $300,000, which for someone like Great Britain or the Czech Republic, that's a ton, because they don't have hardly anything to... They raise all of their money independently. They don't have these big leagues to pour into them or the government. So that's huge, the fact that Great Britain doesn't have to requalify next time around. And so you can really capitalize on that. And hopefully Manfred and MLB continue to invest in that. There's clearly an emphasis moving forward on making baseball more international. MLB, both MLB and just like the WBC, just baseball globally in these other leagues. So hopefully with these Mexico series and the London series and Paris, we can start seeing more popularity and hopefully more funding put into those domestic leagues so that they can actually start growing some homegrown players. You see someone like Max Kepler, who came from Germany. He was developed in Germany. So it's possible to see players like that are developed in different countries and still come over to MLB. So I think that if you have the funds for these certain countries, I think that goes a long way, both in the WBC and for just developing them for MLB.
My mind is starting to spin out and think of all these things of Great Britain opening up a baseball academy, and in the off season, who better than to come and maybe cut the ribbon, but a Jazz Chisholm. And you go, okay, now we're starting to, right? We're starting to see it all come together and mesh and take advantage of that. And now Jazz is like, you know, yeah, I was excited before, but now I'm really like, now there's like people, there's hands that I'm shaking, there's babies I'm kissing. Like, yeah. It's a legitimate thing that can be really exciting. So yeah, 2026 World Baseball Classic is great. For anyone that is maybe not paying attention to the KBO, NPB, or even LMB or CPBL, these aren't just letters, folks. These are leagues going on around the world. And I know those leagues don't get as much attention now that the pandemic is over. It was a great moment in time when, you know, everyone was following, you know, what's going on in Japan and South Korea. But what are some of the best stories that are out there, or your favorite stories for people to, you know, tune into a Nippon Ham Fighters game or something like that? What are they going to see maybe if they're following you on Twitter?
Yeah, no, that's a great question because I think that now that the WBC is over, my whole thing is like I want to grow baseball around the world and kind of connect the baseball world. The WBC was like the pinnacle of that, but there's still so much baseball year round every year. So, like you said, Korea, Japan, Taiwan, you got all of these leagues that are very, very solid that I mean, you got the top of the players in NPB coming over here and killing it over here. Like they're doing great. So clearly there's talent in other places of the world. I think the first thing that you need to expect is waking up at 3 a.m. and learning how to do some adjusting of your sleep schedule. But if you can get over that and watch a couple games, it is some of my favorite baseball that I've been able to see. Top headlines, just briefly. We can like a couple of the top players from Japan, since Japan is the consensus second best league in the world. They're just behind MLB. Of course, MLB's the best, but they're better than AAA, like clearly better than AAA. And so we got a lot of their top players come over to MLB, but not all of them. A lot of their players just stay because they want to be home and they get paid plenty to stay in Japan and succeed and do really well. The top players that you're going to want to know, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, he's going to probably be the top free agent, international free agent next year. He's going to be one of the best pitchers on the market coming into USA because his team is finally posting him after this NPB season. He is the consensus best pitcher in Japan, has been for like 3, 4 years. He's won back-to-back MVPs, Cy Youngs, pitching triple crowns. Like he's doing a lot of stuff that has never been seen on the mound in Japan. So he'll be coming over here. I think he's only 24 right now. He'll be coming over to MLB next year following this season. That being said, he's probably not in a couple years going to be considered the best pitcher in Japan because there's a younger pitcher who also was on Team Japan. Both of these guys were for the WBC. Roki Sasaki, who is 21 years old, throwing 102 miles per hour, the nastiest pitcher maybe in the world at 21 years old at this point. Like he hasn't allowed a run in 3 straight starts in Japan yet. His strikeouts per nine are like 15 plus right now. It is absurd. He had like 20, like 30 swinging strikes of this last start. It was ridiculous. So last year he made some headlines because he almost threw 2 straight perfect games. He was 1 inning short because his coach pulled him. He could have gone 2 straight perfect games. So he's gonna come over to MLB. At least he says he wants to. We're gonna have to wait a good 5 years or so though, because he's still so young and because of the posting system, it takes a while for the players to actually be eligible to be posted, unless you're like Ohtani and you take a $100 million pay cut to come over here to play. It's very rare though. Like it's a lot of money to miss out on for a few years. So those are the top pitchers in Japan.
And I think we saw it
it's really
Sasaki and
exciting.
Yamamoto going against each other. So like that was like a big matchup. So yeah, you've got all that covered. You're still, again, keeping tabs on all the US players. Hey, where can they play in the next World Baseball Classic? So it's still incredibly relevant to everything going on. Sean, following you at Sean underscore Spradling on Twitter, anywhere else, Baseball is Boring podcast as well, right?
Yep. So my podcast is WBC Central on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast network. You can, if you look up Baseball Isn't Boring, you'll find it on all podcast streaming platforms. My Twitter is mostly where I do most of my coverage, Sean underscore Spradling. I have TikTok as well. It's basically all my tweets, but in video form. So that's Sean Spradling, just at Sean Spradling. I have an Instagram, don't really post much baseball on there, but everything's in my link tree if you go to my Twitter as well. So you can follow everything there.
Awesome. We are at DNVR underscore Rockies. At Patrick D. Lyons is where I'm at Twitter. And there's a saying when it comes to baseball and momentum and podcasts, Sean. It's that you're only as good as your next show. So we will talk to you tomorrow at 1 p.m. on the DNVR Sports Channel here on YouTube.